where we bring you thought leaders from around the world so you can share their inspirational stories and empowering practical tools on spirituality, mindset, self-love, being master of your own reality, purpose, business and lifestyle, and so much more. Everything from these beautiful people is so heart-centered and so freaking wise and so damn valuable that people usually pay really big bucks for their coaching. And I bring it to you for free so that you can have the most inspired life possible. So listen ahead for our latest guest, and I'll see you on the other side.
Hello and welcome to the An Inspired Life podcast, where we find freedom and meaning by embracing our divine essence. Today on the show, we have Amara Samata, who is a conscious evolutionist and the founder of the Inner Guidance Institute. And I'm really excited to talk to Amara today. First of all, I want to let you all in on a secret. Amara got on the call and was like, cool, so my energy said yes, and I'm here. And I got on the call and was like, yeah, my energy said I really wanted to interview you, so I'm here. And we're not even entirely sure what we're talking about today, which is so gorgeous, so divine, and so a way of living an inspired life. But what we spoke about just before we jumped on is the movement, I guess, from the head, the movement from egoic mastery, Amara called it, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about that. But the whole personal development, let's figure out exactly what is going on inside of us and use our minds to, you know, to evolve. And there becomes a certain point that's come up in my life over and over again that now it's the time to embody that and the time to live that instead of the time to know it and to think it. And So I believe that that's probably what we're going to be talking about today, Amara. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Awesome. So can you maybe tell us a bit about your journey and then maybe... Yeah, let's start there. Let's go your journey. How did you get to be doing what you're doing? And then what are you doing now?
Okay. All right. So how I got to be doing what I'm doing. it can be a long story. I'll try to keep it short. I'll give you the bullet points of that or the hot spots of that. So at a very young age in this life, I kind of had one of those epiphany moments when I was a child, those moments where you suddenly just know something, you know, that's beyond your years. And it was actually a question. And it was the deep desire to know what is true. Mm-hmm. And I had this moment where I was just looking at my world and what was being said to me. And I just thought, what happens if I don't believe any of this to be real? And so that's...
How old were you, Amara?
I was 7 years old.
Wow.
And I thought, the actual thought was, if I don't believe what these people, my parents, were telling me, they can't control me. Mm. And I found that to be fascinating, which my parents probably found to be really frustrating.
I just had a moment of feeling for your parents in that. Yeah. What a child. Okay.
An agenda to not be controlled and to find out what's being controlled and why and what's real and what's not. And in my family, it was also God. You know, what is God? What is this God that seems to have so much power over how we behave and how we act and what we're supposed to do and not supposed to do? So it sent off a lot of questioning, and I became a very avid questioner. And seeker, as it's called, you know, of truth and study. And I did a lot of religious studies. At 9, I started doing mail order religious cult, you know, course studies, you know, by mail. It was so cute. And I did a lot of intensive kind of research. And then later it went into more spiritual and later more mystical. And then there was a period of time where I just, because of strange things that were happening, I sort of scrapped the whole project, the whole truth-seeking project.
What did you do in that time? Were you like a truck driver or something random like that?
I was actually pursuing an acting career.
Cool.
And in that time, I was working as an actress in Hollywood. And I was playing around a lot with identity and self and self-worth, and got very close a couple of times, two times, to the experience called fame, or the possibility for very big fame. And each time I kind of flinched. I pulled back. And I say now, thank God that did not happen. So at one point in my acting career, that haunting voice, you know, that's like, remember the part about what's real and what's true and what's God, you know, that kind of caught up with me again. I couldn't ignore it. And I said, okay, I quit the film I was on. I fired my agents. I went back and I said, what's the one thing I love? Because when you're really at a low point in life, and you don't know yourself, you're lost, you don't have a lot of clarity, things aren't working, it's really nice to find, what do I love, or what could I love? You know, because this is going to start generating that, you know, do what you love, you know, follow your bliss kind of thing, which is really good advice. I mean, it's going to show you what's true and what's not true a lot faster than if you don't do that. And the one thing I loved was yoga. It was actually the only thing I really could say I loved. So I proceeded on a 12-year career as a yoga teacher after that. 6 really strong years, and then I had a child. I became a mother, which I really wanted, and that became my yoga. So I did yoga and mothering and gardening. That became my yoga. Then I went through an experience that was very traumatic to me. It was like the one thing I was not going to experience in life. The one thing that I was determined never to do, which was to get divorced. You know, I was going to have a family where that didn't happen. That was like my big egoic dream. Which, as egoic dreams tend to go, they're not very sustainable, and they usually get crushed to bits.
I'm making a note to myself, because I've my parents split up as well, and I would love not to do that to my kids. So I'm just making a mental note to be okay with whatever happens, and then hopefully it doesn't happen.
Yeah, there would be a better calling, or a more beneficial calling, something like, you know, to stay true within every moment, and to create a safe container, and to, you know, there was like lots of other intentions besides I will not get divorced.
Which, yeah. Focus on what you want.
Yeah. So I made that mistake. A beautiful mistake. It led to a kind of a breakdown, which led to a breakthrough, which is, you know, a very classic way of evolving is through suffering. So at that time, it was also a breakdown because I was breaking up from my husband. I was moving away to Southeast Asia, away from my family. And I knew I'd probably not go back to my country. So all my friends, all my family, and my husband all just were like taken away from me at the same time.
Wow.
And I was left with, I just went out and found a support group. That was a meditation group, an open meditation group, and I reached out to them, and I was guided to a man that was coming to town, a Filipino mystic and healer. He's a world sustainability advocate, and for about 5 years, he was my mentor. His name is Pai Villaraza, and he's very powerful, intuitive, energetic, healing, awakening force. There were some other teachers along the way. I've had a lot of teachers in my life, and I've always called out to teachers as the way to really evolve this. So being in his field, I had some very interesting experiences.
Like what? Share with us.
Yeah, in 2011, I had the experience in the inner dance process, which is what he sort of refounded. If you look at the inner dance and what it stands for, what it is, you can find it in a lot of cultures, indigenous cultures. And it's very similar to what Osho was calling Latihan. They have it in Balinese cultures. They have it's a very natural, intuitive free, feminine, flowing process of just letting your own intelligence reawaken.
Beautiful.
That's all it is. So in that, I experienced what I learned later was called the falling away of the egoic perception or the egoic death. And so my identity was kind of sort of temporarily wiped clean. And in that experience, I came out, I didn't know my name. I didn't know who I was. It took, took a little time for things to sort of come back into just a knowing of a space. I couldn't speak from my own point of view. I couldn't call myself my name anymore. It was very odd, and I didn't know what to do with it because I hadn't really been trained. I didn't know if I should do anything. So I just watched it. And what I discovered is that living without the egoic perspective is far more amazing.
Beautiful.
Than living with one. Living with one is a very limited experience, actually. And having this very open, it really taps into more infinite possibilities. So everything went into divine flow. Everything became, all my doing became the doing of non-doing. It was completely effortless. It took almost no effort to do anything in life. I was running a workshop and feeding my family, and nothing was actually happening. And
wait a second. I can't understand this. And I get that that's coming from an egoic mind, but I also know my listeners will want to know more about it.
Yeah.
So, yes. I mean, yeah. You said feeding your family. I'm going to start there. Because for me, eating is like, I have to get up, go make the food, eat it. Like, it actually takes a lot of work, even just to remember that you're hungry, to then go get the food and cook it. And so my partner's awesome, and he does a lot of the cooking so I can just keep being in flow. But you were feeding your family and doing that without doing, like doing without doing. What is that?
Exactly. This is where we come into the paradox of awakening. Or this was actually just a pre-awakening. It's just a taste. It's called, in the Tibetan lineage, it's called a taste of emptiness. And what happens is you start to live the paradox that the mind can't understand. The mind wants to know from its dualistic perception, well, how can it be both? And the truth is, to any high question, really mystical or advanced or spiritual, big masterful question that you could ask from a dualistic separate perception, the answer is always the same: neither and both.
No.
Yes. So don't even try to figure it out. It's not worth it. The mind can't figure it out. So you're in this paradox of, wow, it takes a tremendous amount of energy to exist from a limited perception. So that's actually why it takes so much energy to go to the grocery store, what I was doing before, getting in the taxi in Singapore, bringing the food in, walking up the stairs, laying it out. It was like, oh my God, exhausting. When you release the need to be or not be, something that you want or something that you don't want, when you're not operating from these energies, there's this tremendous effortlessness that happens.
So does it feel like what? Because obviously you still go to the grocery store, like your physical form still goes to the grocery store. Does it just feel like you're walking on water or something as you do it? Like,
let me recall. It feels like you're floating, and that's particular in the beginning because it's in reflection to the past. So you have this like, oh, before it felt very heavy, and now it's like, whoo, it's like flowing, it's effortless. And later that becomes normal, so you don't feel it so much as like, I'm floating. And then, so in that experience, I still had the witness of me watching this sense of, effortless being. And I would think like, oh, I need a ride home from this market. without much identity to the eye. And then suddenly, like a nice man pulled up and said, oh, would you like a ride home? And where are you going? And I said, yes. And he just went in the car and he took me and dropped me off. Thank you. Okay, bye-bye. You know, like things like that would happen all the time. I'd like to eat some durian. And then 20 minutes later, I was in a meditation group and somebody brought durian and said, would you like some durian? Oh, yes. So what happened in that experience is I watched it slowly re-magnetize, or, you know, kind of come back. So the egoic structure after 7 days came back, and the density and wanting and the not wanting and all these things arose again. I wanted to know, what was that?
And how do I get back?
How do I get that back? Because that was far more amazing than what I was doing before. So I started asking a few friends, you know, I explained kind of my experience. And one friend said, oh, you're speaking Tibetan Tantra. And I said, great, where's this Tibetan Tantra? You know, how can I learn? And she said, well, you can't. It's secret. You know, you have to study for a certain amount of years, quite a few years, before you're allowed to do that, from her knowledge. So I met her teacher and he said, wow, I'd really like to teach you, but in my lineage, I can't. You have to do a 12-year program first. Wow. And I said, no, I need it now. I need to understand right now, not 12 years from now. So I said, okay, universe. And I had been manifesting from about the age of 16, I think I was consciously manifesting. So that's a whole nother really fun topic we can talk about later. But I said, okay, I want a Tibetan tantric, or, you know, tantra lama living in my house, teaching me every day. And all that's required is that, you know, that's good for me and they speak good English.
Great.
And it took a little while, but 2 months later, I had a Tibetan trained lama, a female lama, living in my house, teaching me Tibetan Tantra.
Wow. Those manifesting skills, like someone living in your house.
I became her assistant. I took her in. She had just emerged as a lama a year prior. I was basically her first student. She came to teach one class in Singapore. I told her my experience and she said, she told me she almost fell off her chair when I told her my experience. Because in her tradition, you would never say that out loud. You know, it's all very kind of secret. Wow. But in Tibetan Tantra, they teach according to experience, not according to training. So if you've had a taste of emptiness, you're now qualified to learn to step into the tantric teachings. And it's the only lineage that has that. It's called Dzogchen. So I said, you know, great, sign me up. So what happened is, for a period of 1 year, I was participating in the inner dance process, which is the really fluid body, heart, mind, spirit, intelligence arising. And then the Tibetan Tantra was actually more like a map. It was mapping along my experiences. So I would tell her what happened to me. And she'd say, oh, now you're in this experience. So these are the traps and these are the more opportunities. And she just kept guiding me so I didn't fall into the very common traps that most people fall into when they hit the edge of their known experience and they start to move into the unknown. And because we have a survival instinct built really strongly within us, we're not so comfortable at moving into what we don't know. It feels dangerous. So she would, you know, work with my fears and say, okay, that's not true. Don't make a story about that. What's really happening is this, and what you need to focus on is this. And, you know, don't feed that. Don't move your awareness to that. Stay with this and see what unfolds out of that. You know, so it was that kind of guidance.
Beautiful.
Yes. I was so blessed to have this, I call this very feminine experience with this man named Pai, and then this very masculine kind of application with this woman named Lama Doma. And the two together created this fusion of what I call the intuitive and the intentional. It's like a framework in which you can then, or a container in which you can then really thrive, which is, you know, basically how this reality works.
That's cool. I really like the mix of those two words, intuitive and intentional. And it seems like that's something you can use for life in general. Like if, yeah, can you tell us more about how you could live intuitive and intentional?
Yeah. Wow. A lot of it comes down to asking yourself, what do I want? And this is, if you go to any, you know, from Ramana to, you know, Aryashanti, different gurus over the times, if you go to them, they'll ask you, what do you want? Because from there, they can track where you are in sort of the consciousness spectrum. How much dualistic perception is active in you, and how much unified perception, and how much emptiness perception, and sort of where you are in the kind of that cycle. So it's always very good to confess what you really want. What do you long for? What do you secretly long for? If you were safe, if you couldn't fail, if failure was totally fine and so was success, you know, what would you want if you weren't afraid? What would you go for? And then to start writing down an intention about this, you know, it's all about discovering what you want and why. As soon as you have that down, then the hows are super easy. How to do it? Oh, there's 100 ways. Just pick one that's fun.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Right. And then that's when we get into all the kind of, you know, things that you're interested in. And maybe on your podcast, you talk about, what's my intention around relationship? Why is that my attention? What is it I'm actually trying to get? Why do I want that so much? What is it pointing to? How could I move more into the discovery of that, the exploration of that in the most conscious, clear way? Same with, could be relating, it could be awakening, it could be healing, it could be parenting, it could be birthing, it could be dying. And just putting that, your intention, and getting really clear, what do I want? You know, and then don't lie to yourself.
Yeah.
Because trying to not want what we want is pretty, it doesn't really work. I've not found it to work out very well.
Don't some spiritual practices sort of suggest that you find a way not to want what you want, not to desire what you desire?
Yeah, so these are you know, in a lot of the ancient lineages, they explored trying to not want what you want. You know, and even the Buddha went through a phase of that, and he came out and he told everyone it doesn't work. But they still keep giving it a go. It's a very masculine approach. It's about, and I mean masculine in the kind of, like if we have plus and minus, you know, feminine more plus, yin, masculine, you know, more of a minus, yang expression, not good or bad. And the masculine has a kind of, stay in the center, you know, don't be distracted, don't go there, don't do this, don't do, you know, do that. And it works for some people if it's applied in the right way, absolutely. And the feminine is go there, you know, find that, see that, explore that, open to that, flow with that. And they both lead to the same place.
I think I like that one better.
Yeah. So what I found is after, you know, 12 years of really avidly seeking, and even more than that, it wasn't working for me. The masculine programs weren't working, and they actually don't work well in this time that we're at. Probably people like Osho and a few others really started birthing the, you know, allowing the feminine processes to come in to play. And of course, just like the masculine and feminine, they can get misused and misunderstood, and, you know, you can fall into the traps around all of them.
Yes. So in my, let's take this to a practical sense now. So in my everyday life, sometimes I'm like, no, you can't have that. And then I'm like, hang on a second. Yes, you can. And that's a beautiful, allowing of what I want. And then other times it's actually not the best thing for me. And I'm like, oh, you can have that. And that's when I feel like I'm misusing that way of like, you can have and be anything that you want. Does that make sense?
Perfect. Yeah. So what you're doing by admitting that you want something, mm-hmm. and then either you get it or you don't get it. Let's mm-hmm. say, you want a piece of chocolate cake.
Yeah. Okay. And, cause that's kind of what I was thinking anyway.
Yeah, so this is where I get practical and I use the metaphor of chocolate cake. This will make it easy. So if you want chocolate cake, and let's say that you deny yourself the chocolate cake because you've proven to yourself that, you know, it doesn't make you feel good, or afterwards you end up, you know, bloated and unhappy or something. Mm-hmm. So you deny yourself the cake. Now you're going to watch, the feedback never lies. Mm. You can misinterpret it for a while, but it will never lie if you're paying attention. So you will see how much of that decision benefited your experience and how much of it didn't. So if there's a sadness around, well, I didn't eat the cake, but I feel lonely. I feel uncomforted. You know, I feel something else is arising. What was that cake pointing to? What was that desire really wanting? Chances are it wasn't really the cake, you know, and chances are you sensed that. Mm-hmm. And so you denied that, but you didn't take it all the way. If you deny yourself the cake because you feel that's probably not best for you, mm-hmm. and there's any kind of a but, you know, but I wanted something else, or but I'm left feeling lonely, or but I'm a little depressed, you know, mm-hmm. then you want to take it a step further and look at, oh, okay, great. What is this experience that's rising up in me because I denied myself something? What does it want? No, so you're getting to the desire behind the desire behind the desire. Mm-hmm. Maybe it wants to reach out to someone. Maybe it wants a connection with someone. And so then you explore that, and there's going to be positive and negative aspects of that. Mm-hmm. What worked, what didn't work, what served me, what didn't serve me. And you're constantly refining. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, you're refining your experience of self interacting, you know, with life, and it's teaching you who you are more and more, and you're having the courage to admit, I really want this. You know, and sometimes we need to stop denying ourselves, and sometimes we need to, you know, a little bit move more towards the denial. Okay, that's enough chocolate cake.
Okay, you've eaten chocolate cake every day this week. What do you really want?
It doesn't seem to be leading to this amazing experience of liberation. Peace, bliss, and joy are the byproducts of liberation. You know, that's where it tends to hang out, in one of those states to some degree or another. Mm-hmm. So it's really about when you activate what you want, and when you look at yourself really closely, and you can also look at what you don't want. That's nice information, but it's not the best to indulge it. It's nice to just sort of, okay, I know that, but great, but what do I want then? Mm-hmm. And you'll start to see, as you go for it, you'll start to see, actually, that wasn't what I wanted. Mm-hmm. What is it really? What is it really? Now, some people can cut through, you know, cut the chase and just get down to the root. Mm-hmm. And I teach people how to do that in with inner inquiry and inquiring processes. So that you can shave off a few years of processing in one session.
Nice.
Yeah, definitely. And then out of that, and I'll just say, out of that searching that happened for me, you know, and out of that process, just to kind of show you one example of where this kind of inner seeking and discernment and applying a lot of awareness as much as I can to my conscious experience. Mm-hmm. What happens when you do that? Well, for me, a year later, it led to what is called an awakening. And that process was, you know, something almost impossible to talk about, but there are things that can be spoken about it. Mm-hmm. And that's just the beginning. So that's just the beginning. It's just an invitation. An awakening is not a guarantee, but it's a big invitation to perceiving from a more open perspective. So separate, limited perception is not your only perception that you have access to. You also have access to your divine perception. That's what we call unity or oneness, or really seeing, knowing, and experiencing the oneness of all things. And you can also have access to the emptiness or the void or the nothingness of all it is. And then you're going to have, out of the everything and the nothing, you're going to have something, and that's called your life.
Oh, wow. You make that sound so simple.
Really simple. It's very simple, actually. We make it so complex. And, you know, my teacher said one of her biggest message to the world is that awakening is actually easy. It's non-awakening that takes tremendous effort. And you can tell, because it creates stress, it creates discord, it creates disharmony. These are all the side effects of non-awakening. It takes a tremendous amount of money and effort and time to keep it at bay. We've just gotten very used to it.
I can feel that, actually. Like, in my body, I was like, oh, yes, you are just probably doing a bit of that at the moment. So maybe I'll have to find out how I can book a session with you at the end. But if we are doing awakening, if we are experiencing the process or trying to get to that part, right? But we're living in a Western world that requires us to get up and do a job or a business or something each day. I mean, how do you do that practically? Like, inquiry, yes. It's just hard. I know it's a mind thing, but I feel like my listeners want to know as well, how do we do awakening?
Exactly. Okay. Sorry. All right. So before you can go into the how, once again, you're all going to have your own unique way of doing your awakening. Mm-hmm. You know, the paradoxical non-doing of your awakening. You have to know why you would want to awaken in the first place, and what you are willing, you know, how far are you willing to take that? So even if I ask people, you know, who say, oh, I want to wake up, I want to be more conscious, I want to evolve, I want to, whatever they call it, become one with the divine. They have all kinds of names for it. Mm-hmm. I'll ask them why. We'll go into that. And then even if what? And so it's very good to know what's the highest price you're willing to pay for it. Even if my friends and family fall away, even if I have to quit my job because I realize I'm living a lie. Even if, like Eckhart Tolle, even if I have to sit on a park bench for 2 years, homeless. Until it reconfigures into what it's really wanting to be. It doesn't have to take that long. A lot of self-illuminated people don't have a guide next to them, and so it can take a little longer. I like the guided system. I found it's very efficient. And you can also, you know, you're evolving into you. It's not like something takes you over. You are stepping more into you. So this is what, you know, how I think of the universe. You know, it's you. It's all you. And none of it's you. You kind of have to stand in. Well, you can stand in both. But at first, you kind of stand on one side of the or the other. So you can say to universe, I'd like it to be graceful. It's very challenging for me. And I work with people who've had massive awakenings that affect their body in a way that it's almost unbearable. For me, my awakening was 7 months afterwards, 24 hours a day of nearly unbearable bliss that was happening and transforming my whole structure. And it was nearly unbearable to my past system.
To your body, to like the physical form, is that what you mean?
Yes, the physical body.
Is that kind of like when you're having an orgasm and it's like almost too good, it's painful? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, for 7 months, like that. Yep.
Wow. How do you look after kids in that time? Like,
so this is really important to understand. The less you resist it, the more you surrender, the more you stay awake within it, the more you, you know, let go to what needs to be let go of and stay with what needs to be stayed with. It has its own intelligence. So it takes care of itself. It nurtures itself. It's only when we fear or resist that things can go a little sideways, as I call it. So in my experience, because I was trained to not resist, everything aligned up perfectly. So when I was like falling into states of bliss where I couldn't get off the ground and I was laughing and crying, I couldn't put on clothes, you know, things like this would happen. right before it would happen, my son's friends would call and say, hey, can, you know, your son come and play for the next, come play with us for the day? I'd say, sure. And they'd come and pick him up. And as soon as he left, you know, boom, I'd be out. And then whatever I was came back, you know, just effortlessly, he'd walk in the door and I'd start making sure he had food. It was very,
wow.
This is the flow. This is the flow that we're all seeking. It's always there. We just block it. So I was not resisting. I was trusting. And I was also calling with what was left of me, you know, make this graceful, make it easy. Help me. Don't leave me in a place where this doesn't work. And that's how I ended up in Bali too, is during this awakening, I came back to town because I was on a teaching tour with Pai when it happened. And I couldn't recognize even that life, you know, that apartment, that life. I didn't know. It was so not in alignment with the consciousness that was embodied within me. So I said, oh, you know, universe, please make my outside and my inside match. The next morning, my son's father said, why don't we move to Bali?
Wow.
And within 2 weeks, I, again, very effortlessly, I switched schools, I relocated pets, I, you know, got new tenants in, did apartment stuff, like all the stuff that would be very draining and difficult. I had things put on shipping containers. It was completely effortless. We soared into Bali and I sat down in a villa in a garden and I stayed there for 3 years.
Wow.
I was teaching quietly and one-on-one. And then after about 3 years, it said it's time to get up and start more.
Oh my gosh. So it really does kind of happen. Hey, is this what they call a Kundalini awakening? Is that,
yes,
that the kind of awakening? And what's your life like now? So now that you have had this experience, the unbearable bliss, which sounds so interesting to people like me, I'm like, okay, I'll try it. Just give it to me. I'll take that over what I've got right now.
But I'm sure
it feels very different at the time.
Yeah.
But what is your life like now that things have settled? Like, how do you experience life?
So yeah, a friend asked me, what do you see when you look out of your eyes? We could call it, from the mind's point of view, from the wisdom aspect, I would call it, I see the mind of God. And the total perfection of that at all times. From the heart or the compassion perception, I would say, you know, I see the heart of reality and the perfection of all of that. So what that looks like, you know, nobody from the outside is ever going to be able to clearly see or know what I'm experiencing. They can look at me and imagine, oh, she's like this or she's not like that, you know, and people have different experiences of me. I have a human, as we call it, which is kind of our human conditioned experience, but it can't fool itself anymore. So even though I have egoic qualities, they can't fully believe in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't take them so so seriously. But there are things that are being learned and understood about the egoic conditioning, especially in masculine feminine dynamics and how the world operates. And so I'm kind of my own guinea pig on what's left over from that experience. I also receive a lot of downloads about how to bring all this wisdom into very practical, simple, powerful, effective tools and strategies. And that seems to be a big bulk of my work that's coming forward. And then, you know, I won't lie. It's awesome.
Okay. I mean, do you still go like dancing, make love? Like, do you still do human things? Like, do you still get angry?
Kind of. It's very interesting. Okay, good questions. I mean, when it first happened, it was first blown out. All those things relating was ridiculous because I actually, so you will go through a period where you can no longer function this. Your relationship to everything changed. So my relationship to food, to sleep, to clothing, to work, to speaking, all of it shifted. And, you know, that was a really funny, we call it an integrative experience. That's not fully true. There's nothing left to integrate, but you'll be careful what you start to believe even in those states. But yeah, so it appears to be integrating. And then, so the work afterwards is just watching all the ways that you try to deny what's true and why would you do that? So I typically don't get angry. But about 6 months ago, I got really angry.
Okay, good. Mine was on the weekend, but that's okay.
And that again, so the reaction happens and then I reacted as, it's all, you know, it really boils down to so much about responsibility, what I call the ability to respond from a very awake place. And sometimes that can look reactive to others, but it's actually very responsive. So I did kind of a hybrid of a reactive, responsive, action. And it was good medicine for the people involved and myself. And then I just keep further looking at what was that about? What did it want to show me? What do I really want underneath that? What was really true? What was not true? And it just keeps refining and giving ourselves permission to fail. You know, one of the worst things we do as, you know, spiritual people, you know, our conscious people, is we're always on this vigilant lookout for like, oh, that was your ego. You know, or that was this or that was that. And we're always trying to qualify. You know, people say, oh, she's the real deal. I hear that about myself. They'll say, oh, she's the real deal. You know? And then if I do something that from their perspective, they don't understand why it's happening, then, oh, maybe she's not. So a lot of judgment. And we are weaning ourselves as a humanity out of the need to judge consciously and unconsciously as a way to grow.
Okay. Any practical tips on how not to judge? So on the weekend, I had like just, you know, 2 days of just feeling really crap. And I knew I was reacting, but I was reacting anyway. Like I was like observing myself and I'm like, I'm still going to do it. I don't even care what you say. It's like, how do you not judge yourself in those moments?
Yeah. So it's really about your highest intention, you know, the moment of judging or around that experience, what is it you really want? Do you want to know yourself? I call this, do you want to be right or do you want to be free? Okay, you gotta know. If you want to be right, I can't really help you. Right, and you're gonna be wrong and you're gonna be right and you're gonna be wrong forever. You're always right and wrong. The other person's always right and wrong. Leave it at that. If you want to be free, well, then that gets really exciting. Then we can work with, great, you had an awareness that you were judging. That right there is an indication that you are awake enough to evolve, period. So,
cool.
The first step is awareness. Mm-hmm. You know, I did that. And then the second step is look at the feedback. What was the fallout of that? Am I more free? Am I more liberated? Am I more honest? Am I more flowing or less?
Mm-hmm.
Probably it will be a mix of both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where, again, people tend to, I call it the salt and the sugar. So you have to very carefully decide which part of that was truthful and authentic and what part of that reaction was fear-based. And it always works out, whether we like it or not, that that experience, no matter how unconscious or conscious it is always perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Good to remember that.
Yeah, that's handy. It's one of my mantras. Like, as things are happening, I'm like, this too is perfect, because it's so easy to see the synchronicities and how things line up and your manifestations and be like, oh, everything happens perfectly. And to see like stuff start to seemingly fall apart and be like, this isn't perfect. No, this too is perfect. It will be anyway, in hindsight. That's what I tell myself.
Yeah, and then there again, the opportunity in that is more permission, more self-love. And the trap in that is to use the perfection as an excuse for just bad behavior.
There's like a shadow of everything, isn't there?
Yeah, it is. And you're always discerning what was the light and what was the shadow.
Gosh,
and this is work. That's it.
Yeah. God, Amara, I could talk to you for so long. This has been incredible. Do you have any more, like one more practical tip that you would like to give the spiritual and truth seekers like you?
Yeah, there's a lot of, again, triggering. We're going to start to develop a new relationship to triggering and conflict, and it's going to rise up in the world and it's happening right now. And this is trying to create a breakdown. It's going to create a breakthrough. So those that are on the kind of learning curve, you know, they're kind of ahead of the curve on this, are going to have a much better time. So one of the things you can do is okay, really simple. Sit down in a quiet space, draw a circle around yourself and call in, you know, a sacred circle and a nice place, and just call in the aspect of yourself or the aspect of another that you are in most conflict with. So you could call in my ex-partner, or you could call in my saboteur, you know, or I could call in my inner child that seems to be very provocative in life, you know, throw tantrums and things. And have a heart-to-heart conversation with them. You know the truth of both sides. You can call in a mother or a father. You can call in somebody who's just passed. You can call in somebody you hate, you know, and just it builds empathy and it builds understanding so that you can have better responsibility towards your actions. And just ask, what do you want from me? I can't give you that. I'm really sorry. What I need from you is this. How can we make peace here? You know, what is it you need? What do you want? What are you afraid of? These kinds of questions. And then always end it with the last, I call the medicine of forgiveness. So any confessions that want to be made, and then I'm so sorry, you know, I let you down. I'm so sorry I didn't listen to you. I'm so sorry I didn't understand you. And really, and let them, if they have an apology for you, I'm sorry I couldn't be more of what you wanted. You know, just let them speak. And then the elixir of gratitude, you know, thank you for what you did offer. Thank you for what you taught me. And this creates tremendous healing through the power of visualization.
Wonderful.
This is a sacred archetypal journey of, you know, that creates healing.
Thank you, Amara. How do people come and find you?
Okay, they can find me at amarasamata.com. That's where I offer my private work, either in person or on Skype. And I also do mentorship programs. They can look at Inner Guidance Institute. So far right now, twice a year, I hold training programs on how to facilitate the kind of work that I facilitate with people. And that's for people who are either really interested in a deep experience of self-transformation and also being of service. So you have to want to be of service in order to join that work.
Mm-hmm.
And I work with people that are already healers and in the healing arts and many modalities, different modalities, and they use that to kind of, you know, bring greater mastery to the work that they have. And then soon, yeah, I'm working on online programs that will be teaching this more. I'm finishing a book and I'm opening a center in Bali. So you can look for things at the mid to end of 2017.
Beautiful. So you're in like a near state of bliss a lot of the time and getting so much done. Enlightenment or the process to it sounds beautiful. So I'm going to spell out your name so that people can find you. AmarasaMata.com. Did I get that right?
Perfect.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Amara. Thank you to our listeners. If you want to come over and join the conversation and ask Amara and I some questions, head over to facebook.com/aninspiredlife with Kiara. And then you can find the podcast where we've talked about this, all of this, and you can ask us questions and start a conversation. We'd love to hear from you. Amara, did you have one more thing you wanted to say?
Yeah. Also, I just created Ask Amara on Facebook too.
Beautiful. All right. So we go to facebook.com/AskAmara. Is that it? Awesome. Okay. Thank you everyone for listening. Thank you so much, Amara. It's been a pleasure.
Precious one. That was so beautiful. I love talking to you.
It was really nice. I'm definitely going to work with you at some point, Amara. So I know you've got somewhere to go, but I look forward to talking to you again.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
You have been listening to the An Inspired Life podcast with me, Kiara O'Leary. I'm so excited to be guiding you on your own journey of living your own version of an inspired life. Head over to aninspiredlife.com.au if you want access to more inspiring stories, tips, tools, frameworks, anything that I can possibly give you that will help you live a more fulfilling life. I've put on there and so much of it is free. And there's also empowering life solutions from how to make your breakup the best thing that ever happened to you to the Sacred Business Academy, taking it from an idea to your life's work in only 11 weeks. So I hope you can head on over to aninspiredlife.com.au and find something that will help you and guide you for where you're at right now. Thank you. My name's Kiara again, and I am so grateful to be guiding you on this journey. See you next time.